I'll overthrow Aeolus and let the storms run free. If we destroy the mortal world, all the better. They never honored me, even in Greek times. Humans and their talk of global warming. Pugh! I'll cool them down quickly enough. When we retake the ancient places, I will cover the Acropolis in snow.
The ancient places? Leo's eyes widen. That's what Enceladus meant about destroy the roots of the gods. He meant Greece.
You could join me, son of Hephaestus, Keone said. I know you find me beautiful. It would be enough for my plan if these other two were to die. Reject that ridiculous destiny the fates have given you. Live and be my champion instead. Your skills would be quite useful.
Leo looked stunned. He glanced behind him like Keone might be talking to somebody else. For a second, Jason was worried. He figured Leo didn't have beautiful goddesses make him offers like this every day. Then Leo laughed so hard, he doubled over.
Yeah, join you. Right. Until you get bored of me and turn me into a Leo-sickle? Lady, nobody messes with my dragon and gets away with it. I can't believe I thought you were hot.
Keone's face turned red.
Hot? You dare insult me? I am cold, Leo Valdez. Very, very cold.
She shot a blast of wintry sleet at the demigods, but Leo held up his hand. A wall of fire roared to life in front of them, and the snow dissolved in a steamy cloud. Leo grinned.
See, lady? That's what happens to snow in Texas. It freaking melts.
Keone hissed. Enough of this. Kira is failing. Porphyrion is rising. Kill the demigods. Let them be our king's first meal.
Jason hefted his icy wooden plank, a stupid weapon to die fighting with. And the monsters charged. Chapter 50. Jason. A wolf launched itself at Jason. He stepped back and swung his scrap of wood into the beast's snout with a satisfying crack. Maybe only silver could kill it, but a good old-fashioned board could still give it a Tylenol headache. He turned toward the sound of hooves and saw a storm spirit bearing down on him. Jason concentrated and summoned the wind. Just before the spirit could trample him, Jason launched himself into the air, grabbed the horse's smoky neck, and pirouetted onto its back. The storm spirit reared. It tried to shake Jason, then tried to dissolve into mist to lose him. But somehow, Jason stayed on. He willed the horse to remain in solid form, and the horse seemed unable to refuse. Jason could feel it fighting against him. He could sense its raging thoughts, complete chaos, straining to break free. It took all Jason's willpower to impose his own wishes and bring the horse under control. He thought about Aeolus, overseeing thousands and thousands of spirits like this, some much worse. No wonder the Master of the Winds had gone a little mad after centuries of that pressure. But Jason had only one spirit to master, and he had to win.
"You're mine now," Jason said.
The horse bucked, but Jason held fast. Its mane flickered as it circled around the empty pool, its hooves causing miniature thunderstorms, tempests, whenever they touched.
"Tempest?" Jason said. "Is that your name?"
The horse spirit shook its mane, evidently pleased to be recognized.
"Fine," Jason said. "Now, let's fight."
He charged into battle, swinging his icy piece of wood, knocking aside wolves and plunging straight through other venti. Tempest was a strong spirit. and every time he plowed through one of his brethren, he discharged so much electricity, the other spirit vaporized into a harmless cloud of mist. Through the chaos, Jason caught glimpses of his friends. Piper was surrounded by Earthborn, but she seemed to be holding her own. She was so impressive-looking as she fought, almost glowing with beauty, that the Earthborn stared at her in awe, forgetting that they were supposed to kill her. They'd lower their clubs and watch dumbfounded as she smiled and charged them. They'd smile back, until she sliced them apart with her dagger, and they melted into mounds of mud. Leo had taken on Keone herself. While fighting a goddess should have been suicide, Leo was the right man for the job. She kept summoning ice daggers to throw at him, blasts of winter air, tornadoes of snow. Leo burned through all of it. His whole body flickered with red tongues of flame like he'd been doused with gasoline. He advanced on the goddess, using two silver-tipped ball-peen hammers to smash any monsters that got in his way. Jason realized that Leo was the only reason they were still alive. His fiery aura was heating up the whole courtyard, countering Keone's winter magic. Without him, they would have been frozen like the hunters long ago. Wherever Leo went, ice melted off the stones. Even Thalia started to defrost a little when Leo stepped near her. Keone slowly backed away. Her expression went from enraged to shocked to slightly panicked as Leo got closer. Jason was running out of enemies. Wolves lay in dazed heaps. Some slunk away in the ruins, yelping from their wounds. Piper stabbed the last Earthborn, who toppled to the ground in a pile of sludge. Jason rode Tempest through the last Ventus, breaking it into vapor. Then he wheeled around and saw Leo bearing down on the Goddess of Snow.
"You're too late," Keone snarled. "He's awake! And don't think you've won anything here, demigods. Hera's plan will never work. You'll be at each other's throats before you can ever stop us."
Leo set his hammers ablaze and threw them at the goddess, but she turned into snow, a white, powdery image of herself. Leo's hammer slammed into the snow woman, breaking it into a steaming mound of mush. Piper was breathing hard, but she smiled up at Jason. "Nice horse." Tempest reared on his hind legs, arcing electricity across his hooves. A complete show-off. Then Jason heard a cracking sound behind him. The melting ice on Hera's cage sloughed off in a curtain of slush, and the goddess called,
"Oh, don't mind me, just the Queen of the Heavens, dying over here."
Jason dismounted and told Tempest to stay put. The three demigods jumped into the pool and ran to the spire. Leo frowned.
Tia Kaida, are you getting shorter?"
"No, you dolt! The Earth is claiming me. Hurry!"
As much as Jason disliked Hera, what he saw inside the cage alarmed him. Not only was Hera sinking, the ground was rising around her like water in a tank. Liquid rock had already covered her shins.
"The giant wakes," Hera warned. "You only have seconds."
"On it," Leo said.
"Piper, I need your help. Talk to the cage."
"What?" she said.
"Talk to it. Use everything you've got. Convince Gia to sleep. Lull her into a daze. Just lower down. Try to get the tendrils to loosen while I..."
"Right."
Piper cleared her throat and said,
"Hey, Gia. Nice night, huh?
Boy, I'm tired. How about you?
Ready for some sleep?"
The more she talked, the more confident she sounded. Jason felt his own eyes getting heavy, and he had to force himself not to focus on her words. It seemed to have some effect on the cage. The mud was rising more slowly. The tendrils seemed to soften just a little, becoming more like tree root than rock. Leo pulled a circular saw out of his tool belt. How it fit in there, Jason had no idea. Then Leo looked at the cord and grunted in frustration.
I don't have anywhere to plug it in.
The spirit horse, Tempest, jumped into the pit and whinnied.
Really?
Jason asked. Tempest dipped his head and trotted over to Leo. Leo looked dubious, but he held up the plug, and a breeze whisked it into the horse's flank. Lightning sparked, connecting with the prongs of the plug, and the circular saw whirred to life.
Sweet! Leo grinned. Your horse comes with AC outlets.
Their good mood didn't last long. On the other side of the pool, the giant's spire crumbled with a sound like a tree snapping in half. Its outer sheath of tendrils exploded from the top down, raining stone and wood shards as the giant shook himself free and climbed out of the earth. Jason hadn't thought anything could be scarier than Enceladus. He was wrong. Porphyrion was even taller and even more ripped. He didn't radiate heat or show any signs of breathing fire, but there was something more terrible about him. A kind of strength, even magnetism, as if the giant were so huge and dense he had his own gravitational field. Like Enceladus, the giant king was humanoid from the waist up, clad in bronze armor, and from the waist down he had scaly dragon's legs. But his skin was the color of lima beans. His hair was green as summer leaves, braided in long locks and decorated with weapons, daggers, axes, and full-size swords, some of them bent and bloody. Maybe trophies taken from demigods eons before. When the giant opened his eyes, they were blank white, like polished marble. He took a deep breath.
Alive, he bellowed. Praise to Gia!
Jason made a heroic little whimpering sound he hoped his friends couldn't hear. He was very sure no demigod could solo this guy. Porphyrion could lift mountains. He could crush Jason with one finger.
Leo, Jason said.
Huh?
Leo's mouth was wide open. Even Piper seemed dazed.
You guys keep working, Jason said. Get Hera free.
What are you going to do? Piper asked. You can't seriously.
Entertain a giant? Jason said. I've got no choice.
Excellent! The giant roared as Jason approached. An appetizer! Who are you? Hermes? Ares?
Jason thought about going with that idea, but something told him not to. I'm Jason Grace, he said. Son of Jupiter. Those white eyes bored into him. Behind him, Leo's circular saw whirred, and Piper talked to the cage in soothing tones, trying to keep the fear out of her voice. Porphyrion threw back his head and laughed.
Outstanding!
He looked up at the cloudy night sky.
So, Zeus, you sacrifice a son to me? The gesture is appreciated. But it will not save you.
The sky didn't even rumble. No help from above. Jason was on his own. He dropped his makeshift club. His hands were covered in splinters, but that didn't matter now. He had to buy Leo and Piper some time, and he couldn't do that without a proper weapon. It was time to act a whole lot more confident than he felt.
If you knew who I was, Jason yelled up at the giant, you'd be worried about me, not my father. I hope you enjoyed your 2.5 minutes of rebirth, giant, because I'm going to send you right back to Tartarus.
The giant's eyes narrowed. He planted one foot outside the pool and crouched to get a better look at his opponent.
So, we'll start by boasting, will we? Just like old times. Very well, demigod. I am Porphyrion, king of the giants, son of Gia. In olden times, I rose from Tartarus, the abyss of my father, to challenge the gods. To start the war, I stole Zeus's queen.
He grinned at the goddess's cage.
Hello, Hera.
My husband destroyed you once, monster, Hera said. He'll do it again.
But he didn't, my dear. Zeus wasn't powerful enough to kill me. He had to rely on a puny demigod to help, and even then, we almost won. This time, we will complete what we started. Gia is waking. She has provisioned us with many fine servants. Our armies will shake the earth, and we will destroy you at the roots.
You wouldn't dare, Hera said.
But she was weakening. Jason could hear it in her voice. Piper kept whispering to the cage and Leo kept sawing, but the earth was still rising inside Hera's prison, covering her up to her waist.
Oh, yes, the giant said. The Titans sought to attack your new home in New York. Bold, but ineffective. Gia is wiser and more patient, and we, her greatest children, are much, much stronger than Kronos. We know how to kill you Olympians once and for all. You must be dug up completely, like rotten trees, your eldest roots torn out and burned.
The giant frowned at Piper and Leo, as if he'd just noticed them working at the cage. Jason stepped forward and yelled to get back Porphyrion's attention. You said a demigod killed you, he shouted. How, if we're so puny?
Ha! You think I would explain it to you? I was created to be Zeus's replacement, born to destroy the Lord of the Sky. I shall take his throne. I shall take his wife. Or, if she will not have me, I will let the earth consume her life force. What you see before you, child, is only my weakened form. I will grow stronger by the hour until I am invincible. But I am already quite capable of smashing you to a grease spot.
He rose to his full height and held out his hand. A 20-foot spear shot from the earth. He grasped it, then stomped the ground with his dragon's feet. The ruins shook. All around the courtyard, monsters started to regather. Storm spirits, wolves, and earthborn, all answering the giant king's call.
Great, Leo muttered. We needed more enemies.
Hurry, Hera said.
I know,
Leo snapped.
Go to sleep, Cage, Piper said. Nice, sleepy Cage. Yes, I'm talking to a bunch of earthen tendrils. This isn't weird at all.
Porphyrion raked his spear across the top of the ruins, destroying a chimney and spraying wood and stone across the courtyard.
So, child of Zeus, I have finished my boasting. Now it's your turn. What were you saying about destroying me?
Jason looked at the ring of monsters, waiting impatiently for their master's order to tear them to shreds. Leo's circular saw kept whirring, and Piper kept talking, but it seemed hopeless. Hera's cage was almost completely filled with earth.
I'm the son of Jupiter, he shouted.
And just for effect, he summoned the winds, rising a few feet off the ground. I'm a child of Rome, consul to demigods, praetor of the First Legion. Jason didn't know quite what he was saying, but he rattled off the words like he'd said them many times before. He held out his arms, showing the tattoo of the eagle and SPQR, and to his surprise, the giant seemed to recognize it. For a moment, Porphyrion actually looked uneasy.
I slew the Trojan sea monster, Jason continued. I toppled the black throne of Kronos and destroyed the titan Krios with my own hands. And now I'm going to destroy you, Porphyrion, and feed you to your own wolves.
Wow, dude, Leo muttered. You been eating red meat?
Jason launched himself at the giant, determined to tear him apart. The idea of fighting a 40-foot-tall immortal bare-handed was so ridiculous, even the giant seemed surprised. Half-flying, half-leaping, Jason landed on the giant's scaly reptilian knee and climbed up the giant's arm before Porphyrion even realized what had happened.
You dare! The giant bellowed.
Jason reached his shoulders and ripped a sword out of the giant's weapon-filled braids. He yelled, For Rome! And drove the sword into the nearest convenient target, the giant's massive ear. Lightning streaked out of the sky and blasted the sword, throwing Jason free. He rolled when he hit the ground. When he looked up, the giant was staggering. His hair was on fire, and the side of his face was blackened from lightning. The sword had splintered in his ear. Golden ichor ran down his jaw. The other weapons were sparking and smoldering in his braids. Porphyrion almost fell. The circle of monsters let out a collective growl and moved forward, wolves and ogres fixing their eyes on Jason.
No!
Porphyrion yelled. He regained his balance and glared at the demigod.
I will kill him myself.
The giant raised his spear, and it began to glow.
You wanna play with lightning, boy? You forget! I am the bane of Zeus. I was created to destroy your father, which means I know exactly what will kill you.
Something in Porphyrion's voice told Jason he wasn't bluffing. Jason and his friends had had a good run. The three of them had done amazing things. Yeah, even heroic things. But as the giant raised his spear, Jason knew there was no way he could deflect this strike. This was the end.
Got it!
Leo yelled.
Sleep!
Piper said, so forcefully the nearest wolves fell to the ground and began snoring. The stone and wood cage crumbled. Leo had sawed through the base of the thickest tendril and apparently cut off the cage's connection to Gia. The tendrils turned to dust. The mud around Hera disintegrated. The goddess grew in size, glowing with power.
Yes,
the goddess said. She threw off her black robes to reveal a white gown, her arms bedecked with golden jewelry. Her face was both terrible and beautiful, and a golden crown glowed in her long black hair.
Now I shall have my revenge!
The giant Porphyrion backed away. He said nothing, but he gave Jason one last look of hatred. His message was clear. Another time. Then he slammed his spear against the earth, and the giant disappeared into the ground like he dropped down a chute. Around the courtyard, monsters began to panic and retreat, but there was no escape for them. Hera glowed brightly. She shouted, "Cover your eyes, my heroes!" But Jason was too much in shock. He understood too late. He watched as Hera turned into a supernova, exploding in a ring of force that vaporized every monster instantly. Jason fell, light searing into his mind, and his last thought was that his body was burning. Chapter 51. Piper.
Jason!
Piper kept calling his name as she held him, though she'd almost lost hope. He'd been unconscious for 2 minutes now. His body was steaming. His eyes rolled back in his head. She couldn't tell if he was even breathing.
It's no use, child.
Hera stood over them in her simple black robes and shawl.
Piper hadn't seen the goddess go nuclear. Thankfully, she'd closed her eyes. But she could see the after effects. Every vestige of winter was gone from the valley. No signs of battle, either. The monsters had been vaporized. The ruins had been restored to what they were before. Still ruins, but with no evidence that they'd been overrun by a horde of wolves, storm spirits, and six-armed ogres. Even the hunters had been revived. Most waited at a respectful distance in the meadow, but Thalia knelt by Piper's side, her hand on Jason's forehead. Thalia glared up at the goddess.
"This is your fault. Do something."
"Do not address me that way, girl. I am the queen."
"Fix him."
Hera's eyes flickered with power.
"I did warn him. I would never intentionally hurt the boy. He was to be my champion. I told them to close their eyes before I revealed my true form."
Leo frowned. "True form is bad, right? So why did you do it?"
"I unleashed my power to help you, fool," Hera cried. "I became pure energy so I could disintegrate the monsters, restore this place, and even save these miserable hunters from the ice."
"But mortals can't look upon you in that form," Thalia shouted. "You've killed him."
Leo shook his head in dismay.
"That's what our prophecy meant. Death unleash through Hera's rage."
"Come on, lady. You're a goddess. Do some voodoo magic on him. Bring him back."
Piper half heard their conversation, but mostly she was focused on Jason's face.
"He's breathing," she announced.
"Impossible," Hera said. "I wish it were true, child, but no mortal has ever."
"Jason,"
Piper called, putting every bit of her willpower into his name. She could not lose him.
"Listen to me. You can do this. Come back. You're going to be fine."
Nothing happened. Had she imagined his breath stirring?
"Healing is not a power of Aphrodite," Hera said regretfully. "Even I cannot fix this, girl. His mortal spirit..."
"Jason,"
Piper said again, and she imagined her voice resonating through the earth, all the way down to the underworld.
"Wake up."
He gasped, and his eyes flew open. For a moment, they were full of light, glowing pure gold. Then the light faded and his eyes were normal again.
"What?
What happened?"
"Impossible," Hera said.
Piper wrapped him in a hug until he groaned.
"Crushing me."
"Sorry,"
she said. So relieved, she laughed while wiping a tear from her eye. Thalia gripped her brother's hand.
"How do you feel?"
"Hot," he muttered. "Mouth is dry. And I saw something really terrible."
"That was Hera," Thalia grumbled. "Her Majesty, the loose cannon."
"That's it, Thalia Grace," said the goddess. "I will turn you into an aardvark, so help me."
"Stop it, you two,"
Piper said. Amazingly, they both shut up. Piper helped Jason to his feet and gave him the last nectar from their supplies.
"Now,"
Piper faced Thalia and Hera.
"Hera, your Majesty, we couldn't have rescued you without the hunters. And Thalia, you never would have seen Jason again. I wouldn't have met him if it weren't for Hera. You two make nice, because we've got bigger problems."
They both glared at her, and for 3 long seconds, Piper wasn't sure which one of them was going to kill her first. Finally, Thalia grunted.
"You've got spirit, Piper."
She pulled a silver card from her parka and tucked it into the pocket of Piper's snowboarding jacket.
"You ever want to be a hunter? Call me. We could use you."
Hera crossed her arms.
"Fortunately for this hunter, you have a point,
daughter of Aphrodite.
She assessed Piper, as if seeing her clearly for the first time.
You wondered, Piper, why I chose you for this quest, why I didn't reveal your secret in the beginning, even when I knew Enceladus was using you. I must admit, until this moment, I was not sure. Something told me you would be vital to the quest. Now I see I was right. You're even stronger than I realized, and you are correct about the dangers to come. We must work together.
Piper's face felt warm. She wasn't sure how to respond to Hera's compliment, but Leo stepped in.
Yeah, he said. I don't suppose that Porphyrian guy just melted and died, huh?
No, Hera agreed. By saving me and saving this place, you prevented Gia from waking. You have bought us some time, but Porphyrian has risen. He simply knew better than to stay here, especially since he has not yet regained his full power. Giants can only be killed by a combination of god and demigod, working together. Once you freed me...
He ran away, Jason said. But to where? Hera didn't answer, but a sense of dread washed over Piper. She remembered what Porphyrian had said about killing the Olympians by pulling up their roots. Greece. She looked at Thalia's grim expression and guessed the hunter had come to the same conclusion.
I need to find Annabeth, Thalia said. She has to know what's happened here.
Thalia, Jason gripped her hand. We never got to talk about this place.
Or, I know.
Her expression softened.
I lost you here once. I don't want to leave you again. But we'll meet soon. I'll rendezvous with you back at Camp Half-Blood.
She glanced at Hera.
You'll see them there safely? It's the least you can do.
It's not your place to tell me.
Queen Hera?
Piper interceded. The goddess sighed.
Fine. Yes. Just off with you, hunter.
Thalia gave Jason a hug and said her goodbyes. When the hunters were gone, the courtyard seemed strangely quiet. The dry reflecting pool showed no sign of the earthen tendrils that had brought back the giant king or imprisoned Hera. The night sky was clear and starry. The wind rustled in the redwoods. Piper thought about that night in Oklahoma when she and her dad had slept in Grandpa Tom's front yard. She thought about the night on the wilderness school dorm roof when Jason had kissed her. In her mist-altered memories, anyway.
Jason, what happened to you here? She asked. I mean, I know your mom abandoned you here, but you said it was sacred ground for demigods. Why? What happened after you were on your own?
Jason shook his head uneasily. It's still murky. The wolves...
You were given a destiny, Hera said. You were given into my service.
Jason scowled. Because you forced my mom to do that. You couldn't stand knowing Zeus had two children with my mom, knowing that he'd fallen for her twice. I was the price you demanded for leaving the rest of my family alone.
It was the right choice for you as well, Jason, Hera insisted. The second time your mother managed to snare Zeus's affections, it was because she imagined him in a different aspect. The aspect of Jupiter. Never before had this happened. Two children, Greek and Roman, born into the same family. You had to be separated from Thalia. This is where all demigods of your kind start their journey.
Of his kind? Piper asked.
She means Roman, Jason said. Demigods are left here. We meet the she-wolf goddess Lupa, the same immortal wolf that raised Romulus and Remus. Hera nodded.
And if you are strong enough, you live.
But...
Leo looked mystified.
What happened after that? I mean, Jason never made it to camp.
Not to Camp Half-Blood, no,
Hera agreed. Piper felt as if the sky were spiraling above her, making her dizzy.
You went somewhere else. That's where you've been all these years, somewhere else for demigods.
But where? Jason turned to the goddess. The memories are coming back, but not the location. You're not going to tell me, are you?
No, Hera said. That is part of your destiny, Jason. You must find your own way back. But when you do, you will unite two great powers. You will give us hope against the giants, and more importantly, against Gia herself.
You want us to help you, Jason said, but you're holding back information.
Giving you answers would make those answers invalid, Hera said. That is the way of the fates. You must forge your own path for it to mean anything. Already you three have surprised me. I would not have thought it possible.
The goddess shook her head.
Suffice it to say, you have performed well, demigods. But this is only the beginning. Now you must return to Camp Half-Blood, where you will begin planning for the next phase.
Which you won't tell us about, Jason grumped. And I suppose you destroyed my nice storm spirit horse, so we'll have to walk home? Hera waved aside the question.
Storm spirits are creatures of chaos. I did not destroy that one. Though I have no idea where he went, or whether you'll see him again. But there is an easier way home for you. As you have done me a great service, so I can help you, at least this once. Farewell, demigods, for now.
The world turned upside down, and Piper almost blacked out. When she could see straight again, she was back at camp, in the dining pavilion, in the middle of dinner. They were standing on the Aphrodite cabin's table, and Piper had one foot in Drew's pizza. 60 campers rose at once, gawking at them in astonishment. Whatever Hera had done to shoot them across the country, it wasn't good for Piper's stomach. She could barely control her nausea. Leo wasn't so lucky. He jumped off the table, ran to the nearest bronze brazier, and threw up in it, which was probably not a great burnt offering for the gods.
Jason?
Chiron trotted forward. No doubt the old centaur had seen thousands of years' worth of weird stuff, but even he looked totally flabbergasted.
What? How?
The Aphrodite campers stared up at Piper with their mouths open. Piper figured she must look awful.
Hi, she said as casually as she could. We're back.
Chapter 52. Piper. Piper didn't remember much about the rest of the night. They told their story and answered a million questions from the other campers, but finally Chiron saw how tired they were and ordered them to bed. It felt so good to sleep on a real mattress, and Piper was so exhausted she crashed immediately, which spared her any worry about what it would be like returning to the Aphrodite cabin. The next morning she woke in her bunk, feeling reinvigorated. The sun came through the windows along with a pleasant breeze. It might have been spring instead of winter. Birds sang. Monsters howled in the woods. Breakfast smells wafted from the dining pavilion. Bacon, pancakes, and all sorts of wonderful things. Drew and her gang were frowning down at her, their arms crossed. Morning. Piper sat up and smiled. Beautiful day.
You're going to make us late for breakfast, Drew said. Which means you get to clean the cabin for inspection.
A week ago, Piper would have either punched Drew in the face or hidden back under her covers. Now she thought about the Cyclopes in Detroit, Medea in Chicago, Midas turning her to gold in Omaha. Looking at Drew, who used to bother her, Piper laughed. Drew's smug expression crumbled. She backed up, then remembered she was supposed to be angry.
"What are you challenging you?" Piper said. "How about noon in the arena? You can choose the weapons."
She got out of bed, stretched leisurely, and beamed at her cabin mates. She spotted Mitchell and Lacey, who'd helped her pack for the quest. They were smiling tentatively, their eyes flitting from Piper to Drew like this might be a very interesting tennis game.
"I missed you guys," Piper announced. "We're going to have a great time when I'm senior counselor."
Drew turned bug juice red. Even her closest lieutenants looked a little nervous. This wasn't in their script.
"You," Drew spluttered, "you ugly little witch. I've been here the longest. You can't just..."
"Challenge you?" Piper said.
"Sure I can. Camp rules. I've been claimed by Aphrodite. I've completed a quest, which is one more than you've completed. If I feel I can do a better job, I can challenge you, unless you just want to step down. Did I get all that right, Mitchell?"
"Just right, Piper."
Mitchell was grinning. Lacey was bouncing up and down like she was trying to achieve liftoff. A few of the other kids started to grin, as if they were enjoying the different colors Drew's face was turning.
"Step down?" Drew shrieked. "You're crazy!"
Piper shrugged. Then fast as a viper, she pulled Catoptris from under her pillow, unsheathed the dagger, and thrust the point under Drew's chin. Everybody else backed up fast. One guy crashed into a makeup table and sent up a plume of pink powder.
"A duel, then," Piper said cheerfully. "If you don't want to wait until noon, now is fine. You've turned this cabin into a dictatorship, Drew. Selena Beauregard knew better than that. Aphrodite is about love and beauty. Being loving, spreading beauty. Good friends, good times, good deeds. Not just looking good. Selena made mistakes, but in the end she stood by her friends. That's why she was a hero. I'm going to set things right. And I've got a feeling Mom will be on my side. Wanna find out?" Drew went cross-eyed looking down the blade of Piper's dagger. A second passed, then two. Piper didn't care. She was absolutely happy and confident. It must have shown in her smile.
"I... step down," Drew grumbled.
"But if you think I'm ever going to forget this, McLean..."
"Oh, I hope you won't," Piper said. "Now, run along to the dining pavilion and explain to Chiron why we're late. There's been a change of leadership."
Drew backed to the door. Even her closest lieutenants didn't follow her. She was about to leave when Piper said,
"Oh, and Drew, honey?"
The former counselor looked back reluctantly. "In case you think I'm not a true daughter of Aphrodite," Piper said,
"don't even look at Jason Grace. He may not know it yet, but he's mine. If you even try to make a move, I will load you into a catapult and shoot you across Long Island Sound."
Drew turned around so fast she ran into the door frame. Then she was gone. The cabin was silent. The other campers stared at Piper. This was the part she was unsure of. She didn't want to rule by fear. She wasn't like Drew, but she didn't know if they'd accept her. Then, spontaneously, the Aphrodite campers cheered so loudly they must have been heard all across camp. They herded Piper out of the cabin, raised her on their shoulders, and carried her all the way to the dining pavilion, still in her pajamas, her hair still a mess, but she didn't care. She'd never felt better. By afternoon, Piper had changed into comfortable camp clothes and led the Aphrodite cabin through their morning activities. She was ready for free time. Some of the buzz of her victory had faded because she had an appointment at the big house. Chiron met her on the front porch in human form, compacted into his wheelchair.
"Come inside, my dear. The video conference is ready."
The only computer at camp was in Chiron's office, and the whole room was shielded in bronze plating.
"Demigods and technology don't mix," Chiron explained. "Phone calls, texting, even browsing the internet. All these things can attract monsters. Why, just this fall at a school in Cincinnati, we had to rescue a young hero who Googled the Gorgons and got a little more than he bargained for. But never mind that. Here at camp, you're protected. Still, we try to be cautious. You'll only be able to talk for a few minutes."
"Got it," Piper said. "Thank you, Chiron." He smiled and wheeled himself out of the office. Piper hesitated before clicking the call button. Chiron's office had a cluttered, cozy feel. One wall was covered with T-shirts from different conventions. Party Ponies 09 Vegas, Party Ponies 10 Honolulu, etc. Piper didn't know who the party ponies were, but judging from the stains, scorch marks, and weapon holes in the T-shirts, they must have had some pretty wild meetings. On the shelf over Chiron's desk sat an old-fashioned boombox with cassette tapes labeled Dean Martin and Frank Sinatra and Greatest Hits of the 40s. Chiron was so old, Piper wondered if that meant 1940s, 1840s, or maybe just AD 40. But most of the office's wall space was plastered with photos of demigods, like a hall of fame. One of the newer shots showed a teenage guy with dark hair and green eyes. Since he stood arm in arm with Annabeth, Piper assumed the guy must be Percy Jackson. In some of the older photos, she recognized famous people, businessmen, athletes, even some actors that her dad knew. "Unbelievable," she muttered. Piper wondered if her photo would go on that wall someday. For the first time, she felt like she was part of something bigger than herself. Demigods had been around for centuries. Whatever she did for all of them. She took a deep breath and made the call. The video screen popped up. Gleason Hedge grinned at her from her dad's office.
"Seen the news?"
"Kind of hard to miss," Piper said. "I hope you know what you're doing." Chiron had shown her a newspaper at lunch. Her dad's mysterious return from nowhere had made the front page. His personal assistant, Jane, had been fired for covering up his disappearance and failing to notify the police. A new staff had been hired and personally vetted by Tristan McLean's life coach, Gleason Hedge. According to the paper, Mr. McLean claimed to have no memory of the last week, and the media was totally eating up the story. Some thought it was a clever marketing ploy for a movie. Maybe McLean was going to play an amnesiac. Some thought he'd been kidnapped by terrorists or rabid fans, or had heroically escaped from ransom seekers using his incredible King of Sparta fighting skills. Whatever the truth, Tristan McLean was more famous than ever.
"It's going great," Hedge promised. "But don't worry, we're going to keep him out of the public eye for the next month or so until things cool down. Your dad's got more important things to do, like resting and talking to his daughter."
"Don't get too comfortable out there in Hollywood, Gleason," Piper said. Hedge snorted.
"You kidding? These people make Aeolus look sane. I'll be back as soon as I can, but your dad's got to get back on his feet first. He's a good guy. Oh, and by the way, I took care of that other little matter. The Park Service in the Bay Area just got an anonymous gift of a new helicopter. And that Ranger pilot who helped us? She's got a very lucrative offer to fly for Mr. McLean."
"Thanks, Gleason," Piper said. "For everything."
"Yeah, well, I don't try to be awesome. It just comes natural. Speaking of Aeolus's place, meet your dad's new assistant."
Hedge was nudged out of the way, and a pretty young lady grinned into the camera.
"Melly?"
Piper stared, but it was definitely her. The aura
who'd helped them escape from Aeolus's fortress. You're working for my dad now?
Isn't it great?
Does he know you're, you know, wind spirit?
Oh, no. But I love this job. It's, a breeze.
Piper couldn't help but laugh. I'm glad. That's awesome. But where?
Just a sec.
Melly kissed Gleason on the cheek.
Come on, you old goat. Stop hogging the screen.
What?
Hedge demanded. But Melly steered him away and called,
Mr. McLean, she's on.
A second later, Piper's dad appeared. He broke into a huge grin.
Pipes.
He looked great. Back to normal, with his sparkling brown eyes, his half-day beard, his confident smile, and his newly trimmed hair, like he was ready to shoot a scene. Piper was relieved, but she also felt a little sad. Back to normal wasn't necessarily what she'd wanted. In her mind, she started the clock. On a normal call like this, on a workday, she hardly ever got her dad's attention for longer than 30 seconds.
Hey, she said weakly, you feeling okay?
Honey, I'm so sorry to worry you with this disappearance business.
I don't know. His smile wavered, and she could tell he was trying to remember, grasping for a memory that should have been there, but wasn't.
I'm not sure what happened, honestly. But I'm fine. Coach Hedge has been a godsend.
A godsend, she repeated. Funny choice of words.
He told me about your new school, Dad said. I'm sorry the wilderness school didn't work out, but you were right. Jane was wrong. I was a fool to listen to her.
10 seconds left, maybe. But at least her dad sounded sincere, like he really did feel remorseful.
You don't remember anything?
She said, a bit wistfully.
Of course I do, he said.
A chill went down her neck. You do?
I remember that I love you, he said, and I'm proud of you. Are you happy at your new school?
Piper blinked. She wasn't going to cry now. After all she'd been through, that would be ridiculous. Yeah, Dad. It's more like a camp, not a school, but... yeah, I think I'll be happy here.
Call me as often as you can, he said, and come home for Christmas. And Pipes?
Yes?
He touched the screen as if trying to reach through with his hand. You're a wonderful young lady. I don't tell you that often enough. You remind me so much of your mother. She'd be proud. And Grandpa Tom, he chuckled. He always said you'd be the most powerful voice in our family. You're going to outshine me someday, you know. They're going to remember me as Piper McLean's father. And that's the best legacy I can imagine.
Piper tried to answer, but she was afraid she'd break down. She just touched his fingers on the screen and nodded. Melly said something in the background, and her dad sighed.
Studio calling. I'm sorry, honey.
And he did sound genuinely annoyed to go. It's okay, Dad, she managed. Love you. He winked. Then the video call went black. 45 seconds? Maybe a full minute. Piper smiled. A small improvement, but it was progress. At the commons area, she found Jason relaxing on a bench, a basketball between his feet. He was sweaty from working out, but he looked great in his orange tank top and shorts. His various scars and bruises from the quest were healing, thanks to some medical attention from the Apollo cabin. His arms and legs were well-muscled and tan, distracting as always. His close-cropped blonde hair caught the afternoon light so it looked like it was turning to gold, Midas style. Hey, he said. How did it go? It took her a second to focus on his question. Hmm? Oh, yeah. Fine. She sat next to him, and they watched the campers going back and forth. A couple of Demeter girls were playing tricks on two of the Apollo guys, making grass grow around their ankles as they shot baskets. Over at the camp store, the
The Hermes kids were putting up a sign that read, "Flying Shoes, Slightly Used, 50% off today." Ares kids were lining their cabin with fresh barbed wire. The Hypnos cabin was snoring away. A normal day at camp. Meanwhile, the Aphrodite kids were watching Piper and Jason, and trying to pretend they weren't. Piper was pretty sure she saw money change hands, like they were placing bets on a kiss. "Get any sleep?" she asked him. He looked at her as if she'd been reading his thoughts. "Not much. Dreams. About your past?" He nodded. She didn't push him. If he wanted to talk, that was fine. But she knew him better than to press the subject. She didn't even worry that her knowledge of him was mostly based on 3 months of false memories.
"You can sense possibilities,"
her mother had said, and Piper was determined to make those possibilities a reality. Jason spun his basketball. "It's not good news," he warned. "My memories aren't good for any of us." Piper was pretty sure he'd been about to say, "for us," as in the two of them, and she wondered if he'd remembered a girl from his past. But she didn't let it bother her. Not on a sunny winter day like this, with Jason next to her.
"We'll figure it out," she promised.
He looked at her hesitantly, like he wanted very much to believe her. "Annabeth and Rachel are coming in for the meeting tonight. I should probably wait until then to explain."
"Okay."
She plucked a blade of grass by her foot. She knew there were dangerous things in store for both of them. She would have to compete with Jason's past, and they might not even survive their war against the giants. But right now, they were both alive, and she was determined to enjoy this moment. Jason studied her warily. His forearm tattoo was faint blue in the sunlight. "You're in a good mood. How can you be so sure things will work out?"
"Because you're going to lead us," she said simply. "I'd follow you anywhere."
Jason blinked. Then slowly, he smiled. "Dangerous thing to say."
"I'm a dangerous girl."
"That, I believe." He got up and brushed off his shorts. He offered her a hand. "Leo says he's got something to show us out in the woods. You coming?"
"Wouldn't miss it."
She took his hand and stood up. For a moment, they kept holding hands. Jason tilted his head. "We should get going."
"Yep,"
she said.
"Just a sec."
She let go of his hand and took a card from her pocket. The silver calling card that Thalia had given her for the Hunters of Artemis. She dropped it into a nearby eternal fire and watched it burn. There would be no breaking hearts in Aphrodite cabin from now on. That was one rite of passage they didn't need. Across the green, her cabin mates looked disappointed that they hadn't witnessed a kiss. They started cashing in their bets. But that was all right. Piper was patient, and she could see lots of good possibilities.
"Let's go," she told Jason. "We've got adventures to plan."
Chapter 53. Leo. Leo hadn't felt this jumpy since he offered tofu burgers to the werewolves. When he got to the limestone cliff in the forest, he turned to the group and smiled nervously.
"Here we go."
He willed his hand to catch fire and set it against the door. His cabin mates gasped.
"Leo," Nissa cried, "you're a fire user."
"Yeah, thanks," he said. "I know."
Jake Mason, who was out of his body cast but still on crutches, said,
"Holy Hephaestus, that means... it's so rare that..."
The massive stone door swung open, and everyone's mouth dropped. Leo's flaming hand seemed insignificant now. Even Piper and Jason looked stunned, and they'd seen enough amazing things lately. Only Chiron didn't look surprised. The centaur knit his bushy eyebrows and stroked his beard, as if the group was about to walk through a minefield. That made Leo even more nervous, but he couldn't change his mind now. His instincts told him he was meant to share this place. At least,